time to get our weekly view from the north. Find all he does for Comcast Sportsnet online, csnnw.com. And the guys are back talking Ducks on Comcast Channel 737 on my Xfinity system. You can become a follower on Twitter. Use the handle at Aaron J. Fentress. Find the new podcast with Bree Amaranthus on said Twitter account. Mr. Fentress, how you doing?
Man, I'm exhausted just listening to that list of things.
Yeah, it's a little much. You need to kind of narrow the focus a little bit.
Crazy. Good Lord.
So, I woke up this morning. I had Talking Ducks in my queue. And
nice.
It's great. As I'm working out on my bike, I'm texting myself what you're saying so we could talk about it. My wife thinks I'm criminally insane. But
well, I forgive it. That's why she married you.
Yeah. Maybe this one's on her. So Joey says Duck fans are spoiled.
Mm-hmm.
I say this might be blown out of proportion on both sides. Fans get spoiled when excellence becomes commonplace, then they dip. I look back. Alabama had a losing season in 2004, sold out one game the next year. And
right.
It wasn't like we showed up Saturday and there were 9,000 empty seats. It's a crappy game. Ducks got a lot of questions and shortcomings. Well, what's your take on all this?
I think it's all the above. I think we tend to lump everyone into one category, no matter what we're talking about. You know, it's the media. I mean, I'm sure you've been following the politics, but Clinton supporters bash the media for being biased, and Trump supporters bash the media for being biased.
Right.
So every day I look on Twitter, oh, the media did this, and both sides will be taking a different position as to which got screwed more by the media. Well, it's the same thing with the fans. There's, you know, there are 55,000 fans. There's a couple hundred thousand fans in the state. You can't say all of the fans are spoiled, because 55,000 showed up. Were they spoiled? So there are, though, there's spoiled fans. There are fans out there who, you know, think the Ducks should win 10, 11 games every year. They don't fire people. Those fans are spoiled. But then there are some fans out there, we've heard from a lot of them, that are just like, man, the tickets are expensive. They keep raising the prices. Every time they have success, they jack up the price, and eventually you price out some people. Then you factor in the fact that it was UC Davis. So if you're a Ducks fan and you're used to the team contending, and this is a year where they're starting out preseason ranked 24, and they raise ticket prices again, and they're playing UC Davis, you might just sit it out, you know. And I think the biggest indication of just that it was just the game, though, is the fact that, or a combination, I would say, of the game and then some apathy because maybe the team isn't that great. Is the fact that you could get cheap tickets on StubHub, on Craigslist. You know, people were giving them away.
Right.
You know, $15. And so when you're doing that and people still aren't grabbing them up and going, and of course, those are already sold, so those are counted. Those are already counted as sold.
Absolutely.
Right. But still, it just shows that people were trying to give them away, which means it wasn't an easy ticket to give away, which means you would expect the program to probably have some left over, which is what happened. But, you know, if that was an opening game against, you know, Nebraska, it would have been packed. And the price wouldn't have mattered as much. So I think it's all those things intertwined with each individual and what caused them to maybe not want to go.
All right. By the way, next time it comes up and the guys bring up Labor Day, I went back. They've had 12 sellouts the Saturday before Labor Day. And you mentioned some of the programs. So, all right. We could move on now.
Right.
Prior to kickoff last week, we saw, oh, Tyrell Crosby's in street clothes. Then Cam Hunt got hurt. And I get the kind of secrecy around injuries, but you talk with the guys, whether it's Helf or Greatwood or Lubick, what did they say specifically about those two guys for Virginia?
Actually, I didn't hear anything from the coaches about injuries. I just saw Cameron Hunt walking by at the practice and said, "Hey, how you doing?" He said, "Fine." There you go. That's my injury report.
Nice.
he wasn't limping. He seemed to be walking fine. I saw him after the game. The same thing. "Hey, how you doing?" "Oh, I'm good." You know, so I think he's going to be okay. Crosby, however, I have not seen that cat in a while. So last week I got mixed messages. One person told me they thought he was going to start Saturday and that it was just precautionary in the boot. Someone else said he hadn't practiced in a while. He's been running around in a boot that they didn't think he was going to play. So I sort of laid off even reporting on it. I just was saying both, you know, talking out of both sides of my mouth on that one. And it turned out he didn't play, which was smart. If you're even questionable, why play him in that game? One, you keep him healthy, and two, you get Aiello some reps as a starter. So it'll be interesting to see what's going this week. I do not have anything updated yet.
All righty. We'll continue with Aaron Fentress, Comcast Sports Net, and obviously, so four red shirts started. I thought the line started kind of slowly. I think you mentioned on the show the numbers not what we've seen against FCS schools, but not all circumstances are the same. How would you evaluate the offensive line game one against, you know, UC Davis?
Yeah, against FCS opponents dating back to 2010, they were averaging 700 yards and 63 points in those games. They had, what, 520 and, right, and 53. But, you know, in those games in the past, they would be over, well, be over at the end of the first quarter, but they would pretty much shut things down at the end of the third quarter and then coast in the fourth. Whereas in this game, they started out poorly in the first, so they kept playing into the fourth. I mean, Prukup didn't leave the game until the last drive. So you could sort of look at it and say, oh, we could flip it in respect and say, okay, the offensive line, you have four guys who've never played before, you know, starting. And that got them off to a little bit of a slow start. Prukup, you've got a quarterback who's never played for Oregon before. That got them off to a little bit of a slow start, but they finished strong. So, you know, there's different ways you can look at it. But overall, if you just look at the entire performance, it was the worst overall performance they've had against an FCS program since before 2010. I don't think there's any debate about that. Just based on sheer numbers and the eye test. And they played against a bad FCS program. Now, some people might say, hey, what about last year against Eastern Washington? Yes, that was the worst defensive performance ever, but the offense went nuts. The offense was awesome. Defense was bad. This past week, both sides were mediocre. What does it mean? You know, it's sort of like, and then let's see some more. It doesn't mean they're going to be bad. I mean, I think people saying, oh, that they're not going to be any good because of that game. I think that's unfair because of all the newness. I mean, think about this. You take out the receivers, four receivers, you take out the four DBs, and you just deal with the seven front seven of the defense and the seven guys in the box on offense, five linemen, quarterback in the back. Out of those 14 guys, only, Freeman, Hunt, Crosby and Mondu are the only four returning starters. Crosby was out. So you had 3 out of 14 returning starters. And not only did you have a bunch of new starters, you had guys who'd never played for Oregon before, and your quarterback, four offensive linemen, a starting linebacker on the outside, a middle linebacker. I mean, need I say more? I mean, your two defensive tackles had 12 tackles last year combined. I mean, it's just the newness there. You have to be fair about this. And so it's fair to say, hey, they didn't look great, but you also have to come back on the other side and say, hey, it was their first game for a lot of guys, either your first game ever or your first game starting, and hiccups are you know, they're normal. But then you come back to, yeah, but man, it was UC Davis, right? It's like they just smashed right through. So it's a mixed bag. I think we're going to come out of Virginia having a little bit better understanding of maybe what this team is. Because at least in Virginia, you know that the physicality level will be different. And so if they put up the same numbers against Virginia, then you feel good about it. If they have a lesser game against Virginia, then, yeah, maybe you give them a pass a little bit. But then you say, hey, wait a minute, Virginia lost to Richmond. So you see what I'm saying? You can go around in circles all you want in many different ways. So I'm choosing to just say, hey, it was mediocre, but I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and see what they do the next coming weeks.
All right. I want to talk about – yeah, by the way, talk about –
I should have been an attorney. I took both sides of the fence on that one.
And by the way –
I was straddling that bad boy, dude, like back and forth.
Not only did you go full circle, I think you completed the full set of the Olympic rings there.
I know. I'm just trying to be fair.
Nobody needs that. I want to talk about Charles Nelson. I mean, he's obviously electrifying. And he's going to be exclusively on offense this season. And you mentioned some mishaps. Even dating back to last year with ball security, you saw it again last week. And I think when you were talking with the guys, you were like, hey, he's great, but those turnovers can't become a thing.
Yeah, you know, he had two in the game. One, he just flat out dropped the punt, muffed it. That was just weird. We all know he has great hands, so you just say, okay, he lost concentration. He's amped. You know, the first punt return of the season, he was thinking about taking it to the house, right?
Right.
He just dropped it. Okay. The kickoff return, it's like, okay, you're 5'8", 5'9", 175 pounds. Stop fighting for yards on the kickoff return. Like, everything flying at you on a kickoff return has been running for 30 or 40 yards at a full sprint, and they're all way bigger than you. You're either going to get blasted fighting for that extra yard, or someone's going to come in and strip the ball from you, which is what happened. So you say, okay, well, you know, no big deal, whatever. But then you got to remember, just several months ago, the last game they played prior to the Saturday against in the Alamo Bowl, he had what I consider the single, you know, biggest mistake of the game was that fumble on the kickoff. That TCU had just scored, and then he fumbles, and they were able to score right away again. And when you're down 31-0 and you're trying to come back, you pretty much need a turnover to come back in that type of situation just based on the clock and simple math and probability. And he gave them that. So then you say, okay, so now we're talking about a guy who in two games has three turnovers on special teams. That's three lost possessions. Now, again, in a 2-1 game against a good team, you're done. He fumbles two against Stanford, Washington, Nebraska. They're going to lose. I can almost guarantee they're going to lose. So, you know, am I saying I'm really worried about it moving forward for him, or that the team should be scared? Not necessarily, but you have to look at him and say, dude, your number one priority is not to take it to the house, not to show off your speed or be a hero. It's to make sure the offense takes the field. You catch the ball, you get as many yards as you can. When you're being held up, you just go down. I mean, I know it's hard to tell a player to do that, but you're not, that extra yard you're fighting for is not worth turning it over and taking the ball away from your offense because the offense is so good. Get them on the field. Anyway.
No, security. Let
ball
your
security,
offense
man.
Live to play a series.
Exactly. But punt returners have this mentality. They all just want to, they're all going to take it to the house. Well, even if you try to take it to the house five times a game for an entire season, you might, if you're really good, you might do it three times out of 90 attempts. You know what I mean? So it's not probable. What is probable, though, is that your offense is going to take the field, take care of the ball.
All right, final thought for Aaron Fentress, Comcast SportsNet. The Ducks secondary last year, well-documented, gave up 35 touchdown passes. And, of course, it's not only on the cover, guys, but I want to talk about the corners. Obviously, Cisse transferred, a lot of pressure on Ugo Amadi, Aaron Springs. Knowing it's week one and a lot can change, improvement maybe? What did you see from the corners?
Yeah, you know, I asked Juwan Williams and Arion Springs if they could pinpoint one area of improvement. They both said communication. They felt like they did a lot better job of communicating. That starts, one, with people knowing what they're communicating. You know, essentially, one of the problems last year was that guys were unsure. You know, so they didn't know what they were not going to communicate because they didn't know. Like, oh, I'm not going to tell them what coverage you're in because I don't know.
No.
So, I know it sounds funny, but it's true. It's like they basically have admitted this. But now they all feel more comfortable with the defense. They know what they're supposed to be in. And this happens. This, you know, young players grow up. And therefore, they're more vocal. They're more sure of what they're saying. Yeah, you know, we're check two, check sky, cloud, whatever. And they feel confident about it. And then that resonates throughout the secondary. And they all hear each other. They talk to each other. They're confident about it. If someone's wrong, whoever's, you know, the captain of the secondary, Tyree probably is, you know, he's going to correct it, say, no, we're this. And then you're going to trust him because he's in charge. And that leads to this better coverage. So they felt like they took a huge step in that area. However, they also admit that the plays they did give up, a few plays that UC Davis had in the passing game were the product of miscommunication. So that's still a work in progress. We did see, however, pretty good coverage. I mean, people were making a big deal over 303 yards passing, but that was in 47 pass attempts, 6.4 yards per attempt. That's not good. I mean, if you hold a team to 6.4 yards per pass attempt, you're having a pretty good game on defense against the pass. So I give them a B-plus on that. But they're going to face better teams. They're going to face better challenges. They're going to face teams with more explosion out of the offense, guys who can actually fly and get open and make cuts and make yards after the catch, unlike UC Davis. So still a work in progress, but they feel like they at least made quantum leaps in terms of communication, which is a good sign.
All righty. There you go. Inside the mind of Aaron Fentress. You can catch up with
what... It's a mess. It's a jumbled mess. Mass confusion. This is why I do the double talk, because, like, I have to get it out. I just have these arguments with myself in my head, and I got to spit it out somewhere.
And do you sit home and watch it on a loop saying, I got to figure some of this crap out?
I'm trying to figure out how to introduce a third person, because I think they're both wrong. So I got to create a triplet.
Nice. Although I don't know if I ever want to be a party to that. CSNNW.com online on Twitter at Aaron J. Fentress. Always appreciate the time, my friend. You travel safe to and from Eugene. I'll catch you Saturday night.
All right, man. Take care.
Take it easy.